Love and Beauty in St. John of the Cross with Father Matthew Blake. Talk 5.
So we've been reflecting upon John of the Cross, and the context, of course, of this retreat, as we've been saying all along, is John as Doctor of the Church and the declaration of John as Doctor of the Church in 1926. And one of the features of some doctors of the Church is that they have been given particular titles. I think Thomas Aquinas is the angelic doctor, and there's various other, not all of them, but certain ones have been given particular titles. And John of the Cross is given the title of the mystical doctor. And the question of mysticism, of course, has been coming up, and it came up last night, and someone asked, well, what's a mystic? And there's really no answer as such to that question. We can't define as such a mystic, because we're dealing with something that is outside of the realm of this world. We're dealing with living by something that is beyond. And yet, we're also dealing with something that is very much experienced. And therefore, the Church specifically names John of the Cross as Doctor of the Church. So his teaching that is of such help to us in this whole area of mysticism. What I want to look at this morning is one of John's poems, one of his most important poems, but one that he doesn't write a commentary on. It's La Fonte, it is called, the fountain, the spring, the source. Indeed, it's difficult to say exactly what to translate the title as. It's the origin of everything. It's known as, and has been designated as, a creed, sometimes described as the mystical creed or the creed of the mystic. It's like it takes us into the mind, the heart, the soul of the mystic, and what it is that a mystic believes, celebrates, rejoices in, draws life from. And it is one of John's prison poems, the poems that he came out of prison with. Therefore, it's a poem that he wrote not for anybody else, but for himself. When he was in prison, he composed some poems to help himself to survive, to stay alive psychologically and spiritually. So it's a poem that takes us, we say, into John's depth, insofar as we ever can enter into the depth of another person's soul, spirit, mind, etc. And this poem, the central imagery of the poem is really two: water and darkness, both of which are things John is experiencing 24 hours a day, 7 days a week in his prison, because he was in solitary confinement, he was in darkness, there was no light got in there. So he's in darkness, physically in darkness. But outside the wall of where he was held, the river flows, the river Tagus, as we call it in English, that flows around the city of Toledo, three sides of the city of Toledo. If you go there today, that's how it is. But of course, the river today is only a fraction of the size it would have been in those days. We're a much, much bigger river. So 24 hours a day, 7 days a week, he's hearing water flowing. So the image of water and the image of darkness are two images that are very much in John's consciousness when there's nothing else to think about or nothing else to do. They're very central to this poem. And the refrain of the poem gives us, in a sense, the three essentials that John wants to get across to us here. And the refrain goes something like this: how well, or how wonderfully, or how clearly I know this fountain, this spring. Again, it's not easy in English to get the sense of this source that flows and that ebbs and flows, that flows quickly and flows gently, even though, or although, it's in the midst of night. We're in the midst of darkness. So the three things there are the knowing. What it is to know. To know. Secondly, this source of everything. This source from which all life comes. Which of course is God, as we will see. But what it is to know. Where all of life comes from, where everything comes from, where everything has its origin. And it is night. Night is the reality that makes all of this possible. Whatever night is standing for, whatever the image conveys here, it is that something that makes all of this possible. Perhaps to help us understand this a little bit, I'll go on a little diversion. I'll come back to the poem in a few moments. John's definition of contemplation perhaps is helpful here for us to grasp what he's trying to convey. And this again, various times in his writings, he defines what contemplation. For John, John understands contemplation in the traditional understanding of the word, not as it is so often used nowadays. It's used in all sorts of different ways. Contemplation, as John would understand it, is the part that God plays in our prayer life. It is something supernatural. It's when God, it's the God side of the conversation, so to speak, of prayer. It is what God directly does in a person's prayer life. When God takes over, when God intervenes, when God does something. That traditional thing. So, I just want to read a few lines in the beginning of, it's John's book, His Dark Night, Book 2, beginning of chapter 5. I said, this dark night is an inflow of God into the soul. Dark night, contemplation, this something. It's an inflow of God into the depths of the person. Now, again, by soul, John means something that is broader, I think, than how we use the word nowadays. For John, the soul is the whole person. It's not a part of the person. Or perhaps it is the real person or the true person, the authentic person. The person as one is created by God to be. So it's not just one part, it's the whole. So into the person, the whole person. But beginning with and starting from the deepest place within the soul. And so this dark night purges and purifies the person at every level. But the piece I want to come to is this, that in this, God teaches the person secretly, without its doing anything, or understanding how this happens. So God is putting this knowledge. So when we go back to the poem and we see all the time, I know. It is knowledge that God has given. It's not acquired in some way that we would acquire knowledge. It is what God teaches. It is put there without the person doing anything. Without the person understanding how this happens. He said, and just to go on a little bit, this infused contemplation then, this loving wisdom of God that purges and that gives life. And it teaches. It purges, it gives life, it teaches, it instructs. in the perfection of love, that wisdom of God. So, this is something which God does. So we come back to the poem now, so again, and this refrain that runs after every stanza of the poem. It's a celebration of knowing. It's a celebration of what? The knowledge, the understanding that God has given to the person. Person doesn't know how and plays no part in it, but just knows. There's a certainty in this knowing. It can be difficult for us to grasp the kind of certainty there is in this kind of knowing. The best example, I suppose, one could come up with is that somebody falls in love with somebody. And you come and you say to them, oh no, not that man, pick that man over there, or that man over there, or that woman there, or there. No. There might be billions of other men and women in the world, but the person just knows this is the one, nobody else. There's a knowing that comes from love. There's a certainty there that you simply can't rationally talk a person out of or rationally put somebody else into play. There's something of that kind of knowing. A knowing that there's a certain, a knowing that a person would live and die for. A knowing that a person cannot be shaken away from, pulled away from. So that's that kind of knowing. That's the mystical knowing that John is celebrating here. And it's God, ultimately, that is known. And the night is the source of this knowledge. It's what enables the knowledge to come. And that's what the mystic lives by. That's the inner world of the mystic. The whole of life is lived from that place, seen from that place. And so the poem goes on, as I said, and has often been described as a creed, an expression of belief. This is what the mystic believes. And the belief coming from the experience of knowing. It can also be described as a celebration or an expression of what's known. And quite simply, what's known is everything. And so it's a celebration of this knowing, that is the chorus that goes after every stanza, this knowing, this spring, this fountain, although it's night, in the night, enabled by the night. And that being enabled, although it's night, even though it's night, being enabled by the night, runs with every stanza. Because it's a celebration of what contemplation, what night, whatever this may be, makes known, makes possible, makes real. And so it begins then, like the creed does with God the Father, as the eternal spring, the spring that's always been there, the source that's always been there. The origin that always been there. It's hidden. And there's always this paradox running through the poem. Something is hidden. It's in darkness. Yet it's known. Known with this certainty. So this spring is hidden. But I know well where it comes from. Hidden and yet knows. That's the paradox that's always running through it. It's hidden. It's in darkness. But yet I know it. I know where everything has come from. I know eternity. I know before everything was. It's the beginning of the prologue to John's Gospel. It's the beginning of the Creed. It's the beginning of the Bible. It's there. But known now, not because somebody has told them or they've read it in a book or have studied it, but it is known from within, known in the depths of a person's being. That's what we've been seeing all the time as we've gone through John of the Cross. John speaks from within, not from outside. But the truth spoken from within, from that experience of God, is the same truth as what is learned in the books, in the catechism, in the creed, etc. So the first stanza is the knowing of God, simply as it is. Then it goes on. I don't know its origin. It doesn't have an origin. It doesn't have a beginning. But I know that every beginning has come from there. So again, that's again the prologue, based on the prologue to John's Gospel. Everything has began from here. And I know it. And again, as always, it is night that enables me to know everything. John has often been described as a person who is always celebrating faith. Nothing is more precious to John than faith. And here we see something of why that is, because it enables him to know everything. So I know it then. Then we come to a word we've been hearing over this weekend a lot in the third stanza, beauty. I know that nothing else is as beautiful. There's no beauty outside of this. This is beauty. The beauty that we can know. And 'tis a beauty, he said, that heaven and the earth drink from, that heaven and earth draws life from. This beauty, which is God, and that beauty that is life-giving, that's giving life to all. They're all drinking. All that exists drinks from this beauty. This something. Again, we know that because it is night. Then, it has no limits. It's eternal. There's no beginning or end. And nobody can reach the ends. Nobody can cross it. Nobody can reach there. There's something eternal and great. Darkness has no power over it then. It's clarity. Nothing can obscure. Even though all the time he's saying we're in the depths of night, now he's speaking about a light that the night cannot obscure. Again, it's the prologue to John's Gospel. The light has come into the world, but the night cannot. That this is a light now that one can see. And all other light comes from this, the source of all light, all seeing, comes from this. So that section of the poem is all about origin, source, beginning, creation, God the Father. Now we come to the Trinity. Now we come to a deeper understanding of God. Not that the Trinity isn't always there. Everything that's gone before has been a work of all three. Now, continuing with the imagery, it's the streams flowing from this. All life comes from here. The lands, hell, the heavens, all reality, all people, all of this world, everything draws life from these streams, which is the Trinity. Everything draws life from this. There's no other life but this. All life. All that has life here. So night enables the person to know all of this. Then the stream that is Jesus Christ, the stream that flows from this, which is infinite in power and reach, reaches everywhere. It's Jesus Christ. Then we go further into the next Trinity then, a stream that proceeds from the two of these, which of course allusion to idea in the Creed, proceeding from both of these, but neither of them precedes it. He's been there from the beginning. That is the Holy Spirit. So the whole of the Trinity then, and all of creation, and all of reality is expressed in terms of water, in terms of streams, rivers, in terms of life, because everything is living and is drawing its life from this river, this source. Creation then, as it is presented here, is something active, something living. Everything exists. And this is a theme we've already touched a little bit upon in John's teaching. And he tells us that when he's speaking about God and relationship with God, everything outside of the Trinity, everything that is created is always in relationship with God. It's relationship with God that holds all in existence. Everything and everyone, including hell, heaven, everything. Nothing is outside of relationship. As I think I mentioned yesterday, even people, he said, in mortal sin, even those who freely choose to cut off the relationship, God never cuts it off. Everything is in relationship with God. And now the poem takes, for its last three stanzas, we could say, a slight shift is probably not the right word, but rather it comes to its great conclusion. And that is the Eucharist. Remember, John is writing this in his prison cell when he does not have the Eucharist. Does not have the possibility of receiving the Eucharist or celebrating Mass or anything or any sacraments or any. He's totally cut off from all of this. That's when he's writing this poem, composing it. This is when he is singing it, when it is keeping him alive and sustaining him in life at that very time when he's deprived of the usual, normal sources of life. So, the last three stanzas are very much centered around the bread. This eternal spring, he said, this, the Trinity, everything, the source of all life, of everything that exists, is hidden in this little piece of bread, in this living bread. And it's interesting the way he puts it here, that this bread is alive so as to give us life. The bread is alive. The bread is living in order to give life. It is always giving life. It's the source of life. So all that he said about the Trinity, he's now saying about the bread, the little bit of bread. This is that we can touch, that we can hold, that we can see, is the Trinity is everything, is all of God, is everything from which everything was created. Then he goes on to the next stanza, the second last one, which is slightly different to all the others, you'll notice, but a very powerful one, because the sense is like John has been describing poetically God and the way God manifests himself and reveals himself and the way we, and now he is turning, even though he has no listeners at this, to all of us, to the world, to creation. It's here, he said. And that, of course, is the bread, the spring, the source, life, and his calling out, appealing, calling, crying out to all of creation, to everyone. That they come and draw life from here. That idea, that biblical idea, all the God, everything that God gives, all the gifts that God bestows, must be freely chosen. God bestows his gifts upon us, but we must freely choose to receive them. And John has so strongly pointed out, shown, demonstrated, celebrated here, everything received from God, everything God has done, everything that this spring has made possible. Now it is calling out, it is appealing to each one of us, to all of us, to everything. That appeal, that call, that spring. Come and draw life. Come and live. Life is a choice. Satisfy their thirst. Although in the night. But here he puts a special emphasis upon. It's although it is still dark, and it is darkness, he changes slightly, not now that although it is night, to because it is night. It's this very night that makes all of this possible. That we can be in relationship with all of this. That we can see the truth in the bread of life, that we can relate with God. As I said, we remember that John does not have the bread, the Eucharist, at this time, but he has the reality. He's clearly in communion with the reality. It's not about having it as such. It is about the reality, which is there, which he's got. And then it concludes with this living spring that I long for, that I desire. And desire in John is a gift of God. The beginning of his canticle, he speaks about the desires for God, they are gifts of God. The longing for God is a gift of God. The hunger and thirst for God is a gift of God. Neither hunger nor absence, thirsting, desiring, are signs of absence. They're rather they're signs of a deeper presence. The more we encounter God, the more we experience God, the more we want him. All experience of God increases the desire, doesn't fulfill it, it increases it. Because ultimately the desire, the hunger is for God. For everything, everything that this poem is expressing. That's what the deepest desire within the human being is for, nothing less. Cannot be satisfied with something less. This is what the desire is. And now this is seen in this bread of life that I can see. And this is the first time in the entire poem, right to the verb, that he uses the verb to see, veil, that he sees. The bread is making visible. But of course, all we are seeing is bread. It's not seeing in any natural, physical sense of the word seeing. It is a much deeper seeing. It's seeing a but somehow the bread, the Eucharist, the incarnation, of course, Jesus Christ, the birth of Jesus Christ, the life, death, and resurrection of Jesus Christ, makes something visible. It is still always through the eyes of faith, but it is made visible. It's a very profound poem. But if we want to know something of what is meant by this term of mysticism, that reality that John lived by, understood is too strong a word because we're always dealing with something beyond the boundaries of our understanding. But it's something that gives understanding, that we receive under, it's a source of understanding. It is a source from which all John's understanding of life, understanding of the human being comes from. There's a line towards the end of John's spiritual canticle, in his commentary, where he said, "Now," he said, "the person understands the secrets of God and of humanity." That understanding of human life, of life in this world, coming from one's understanding of God and growing. The more one understands God, the more one understands life in this world. It's the wisdom of God that shines that understanding on life in this world. That's where John is coming from. Perhaps this poem gives us a sense of what's going on within this person, where he's coming from, where he's viewing things from. And that perhaps is as close as we can ever come to defining what a mystic is. A mystic is someone who sees life in this world and sees all of reality from the viewpoint of God, or from the viewing point of his experience of God. Not from the viewpoint of any human science or ways of seeing things, but it's like they're looking at the same thing as we're looking at, but from a different direction, from a different source, a different viewing point.